Welcome back to the BIM Heroes Podcast. In this episode, we'll be joined by Aaron Kahn, and we will be discussing AEC consulting challenges in the industry and risk mitigation techniques to help mitigate risks. Welcome, Aaron.
Thanks, Cody. Happy to be here.
Would you just introduce yourself for the guests?
Yeah, absolutely. So, hello to everybody who's listening. My name is Erin Kahn, and I'm the founder and senior consultant at Erin Kahn Consulting. Earlier this year, January 2023, I started my independent consulting firm to help support both contractors and startups with construction technology.
Just to kind of dive into a little bit of where you came from and what you're doing, just give us a little bit of a background on how you joined the industry and what made you try to go into the more of the data side and try to look at risk in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's kind of interesting. I never really set out with a hardcore idea of like, yes, I must get into construction. This is what I have to do. I kind of fell into it, I would say. But early on, just growing up, I think I was influenced by the construction industry. So my dad actually is an electrician by trade. So I kind of saw a lot of that. Type of work growing up, and I guess never really thought about it too much. But I in high school as well, we also were able to do things like metal shop, wood shop, learn drafting, which I definitely did not appreciate it at the time, but some of that stuff really stuck with me. When I started in school, I had no clue what I wanted to major in, what I wanted to study. So I was pretty much an open book. And while I was exploring different, potential majors like freshman year at USC, so I was undecided in the liberal arts college at USC, I realized I had missed math and some technical subjects, and I really wanted something where I was working on a team and that would help, benefit the world around me. And something that really checked off all of those boxes was civil engineering. So with, civil engineering and then of course, construction, you're working on some of the, most amazing diverse teams to pull together a building that's going to be there for hopefully years and years and years to come, serving the society and the community that's living there. So that was really attractive to me. And that's basically how I got started, at least within, the interest of civil engineering. And then my senior year of college, I had the opportunity to intern at a construction company local here in Southern California, renovating one of the buildings on campus. And that was basically the gateway into the rest of the construction world. So kind of just happened to fall into construction that way. And when I first started on the job site, it was kind of like, oh my gosh, where's the technology? Like, why are we surrounded by stacks of paper? So I didn't necessarily see that as a turnoff. I actually saw that as a really exciting opportunity to bring more efficient processes to the field teams I was working with. So from that first experience, that pretty much took off with my passion and interest for technology and construction operation processes.
And through that process, did you see a connection to the analytics that you studied in school and where the industry has a lot of different components that are analytical, but we're older industry. I always talk about this with the second oldest industry in the world behind farming. But there's a lot of things that causes projects to go the way they do. And analytically, we can study it a whole lot better today.
Yeah, I don't think I, did saw those parallels consciously, especially so early on in my career. But of course, later on, after having a handle on like how projects are actually put together and how we can actually track and measure things in the field, then a lot of those puzzle pieces started to paint that picture of, okay, what's the data behind the story that's going on in the job site? I think so too. A big piece of it, Cody, was a lot of companies, even a few years ago or even today, are still challenged or somewhere on their journey with getting digitized. And that then, enables you to get digitalized. So you have your full systems in a digital format so you can pull information. So I think without having some of those, digital systems in place, it makes it really difficult to connect that process piece to, again, like the data side. But nowadays, more and more companies are starting to actually, pull in dedicated data analyst roles even to doing exactly that. So it's definitely an exciting time.
Yeah, and I think the analytics of business in general has grown so dramatically in the last 20 years. But this new wave of analytics that you're starting to see within construction is really going to start to help different businesses analytically look at jobs in a different way. And it's not just on the back end when a job, let's say, is a success or a failure, but even all the way in the front end of what business always does too, and projections of a go no-go type decision on a project. Do we want to go with this project into the future? Is this a business area that we want to continue to develop, or is it something that we need to take a step back? Try to go through a little bit of how you have that conversation in a consulting side of things with construction or AEC industry.
Yeah. So, I mean, it matters too, like, does the start at the beginning, right? So does the company or the individual, the entity, whomever you're working with, especially consulting, do they understand, number one, like the value of collecting and gathering data? So a lot of times there's sometimes a barrier to even put some effort in place to do that data collection piece or set up a mechanism to collect that data. And there's some literacy that has to happen first before you can actually get into the weeds of doing the data analysis. But more often than not, what I think most, and this is a nice change in the industry that I've seen, most are very, very happy to say, okay, yes, we do understand that, we can't. You can't manage what you can't measure, right? So a lot of folks out there are very interested in measuring. And then they find, okay, now that I've got all this information, I have no clue what to do with it or how to draw insights. So that's where, I can come in and help make a little bit of sense of it, depending on like what type of data set we're working on. So that's a whole nother conversation to have, like what is the data that we're actually looking at together? Which varies widely depending on the specific, question that you have that you're trying to answer. But yeah, that's essentially it. So, start at the beginning, like, okay, do you understand why you need the data? And then let's work together on answering those questions and understanding also like why do you have the questions that you have? Because that informs how you analyze your data sets as well.
And that's one of the things when I'm talking to different groups, especially with startups of technology or even some more developed companies that are developing different hardware, software, you name it, to the industry to solve these challenges. One of the things that comes to mind of the ones that are doing so well is the why. They really understand the why of what they're trying to develop, and they bring in the analytics from the industry. Talk a little bit about what you've seen with your consultant so far.
Specifically like with the why. Well, let's see. I mean, I would probably pull a little bit more on some past experience, like especially in the field, right? So with, some of the projects that I was a project engineer on or even supporting as a construction solutions director in a past life at Suffolk Construction, it's always key to, either put yourself in the shoes of the field personnel or just be there yourself and actually do the process yourself. Because then a lot of things become very, very transparent. And you may not realize it without doing this process. So I think with the understanding the why behind certain questions we have or like why we're interested in data behind the job site processes, it It honestly comes down to like empathy and emotional intelligence and being able to communicate really well and build relationships really well with the fields, which I would say like most people wouldn't necessarily think that it's super hardcore skill set for a technical role or what's thought of as a technical role, but it's actually those skills that are going to make up the essentials of getting to that why, and then being able to create something of value later on, at least in my experience.
And talk a little bit about your time with a company like Bluebeam. Bluebeam started as a very small group, and now they have user groups that you're a part of. How did that journey begin for you getting involved with Bluebeam and kind of the company that it is today, which is a powerhouse in the industry for marketers?
Thanks for bringing that up. Bluebeam has a special place, I would say, in my journey. So when I first started on my first project ever, I think the team was in the middle of transitioning from, again, like the stacks and stacks of paper and trying to figure out, well, we have this Bluebeam thing. How do we get super digital? How do we, use a digital drawing set? So coming into that, like li literally like day one as a as an intern, being handed Bluebeam was like so eye-opening. So that really was one of the big catalysts, I think, for me getting interested in technology. Like, oh wow, here's this program that will essentially save me from being buried literally in stacks of drawings. This is awesome. So it's also pretty convenient as well. So I'm here in LA. Their headquarters are not too far. They're in Pasadena, so like essentially next door to where I'm located or where I have been located for a lot of my projects. So it was really easy to get involved directly in the community. And I was a part of the Los Angeles, they call them BUGS, Bluebeam User Groups. And today I co-champion the Los Angeles Bluebeam User Group, which is basically a community of, like-minded people who are into technology and promoting technology and have used Bluebeam within their organizations to, further different processes in all aspects of AEC. So I think one of the things that I like most about those types of community groups and Bluebeams in particular is that I'm always learning from somebody else in the community. And it's really amazing to see the creativity that's out there, especially in other workflows. There might be somebody from the architecture side or the engineering side that's doing something that I would never think about, coming from the construction side, but is still inspiring and something applicable. So it's just a really good community, and I think that's a big part of what is driving the industry forward as well as those the tech communities that are working to improve processes with technology.
And with those tech groups that you see, let's say just with staying with Bluebeam's purposes, what do you think made it so successful in trying to fulfill the need that they did?
Geez, what makes it successful? I think there's a natural excitement from a lot of the members. So I mentioned like, yeah, you're coming together with like-minded people. So I think the ability of those community groups to break down silos across the industry, because we talk about this so much, like, oh, construction, AEC is so siloed and none of our data talks to each other. But what these community groups do that's super successful is they're breaking down the silos at the human level. So we're building relationships, not just between our processes and our technologies, but between the people that are actually behind the processes and the technologies. So I think that's something that's super powerful, goes a long way.
Well, and going with that, the vision of education in this industry is a huge conversation right now. There's a lot of technology, whether it's hardware or software, but then there's a lot of processes that are starting to change, that are deeply embedded in this industry, that need to be passed on to future generations. What would your vision for education in this space look like?
Yeah. So So this is such an interesting question because I've started, like I've been seeing some types of education content change in response to the industry change. So there are some higher education programs, and I'm thinking specifically of USC. Actually, they have a new like construction advanced technology program, which I'm sure I'm butchering the name of the program, but they do have it, which is a fairly recent change in response. But I still think there's a really big gap far earlier on in the education cycle. So I know in the beginning you were asking like how did you get into construction and construction tech? Well, I really think some of the super early experiences I had, like learning hand drafting in like middle school and high school, and having to take wood shop and metal shop, and being exposed to that like super early on, really made a gateway to say, okay, I can potentially see myself doing this because I've actually done it technically, before, in a small capacity, right? Learning capacity. But I would imagine, or I hope one day that, construction technology and some of the really amazing things that are now on the market, like I'm thinking of, we have virtual reality, we have amazing 3D models and digital twins and all sorts of cool stuff, robotics even, that are propelling this industry forward. I would love to see that in like a middle school or even earlier curriculum, because it's basically going to be the future, and I think we definitely need to prepare far earlier on than we have been to address that future change that's coming, or I could even argue is happening right now. So.
Yeah, in that generation, you're already starting to see that connection to technology to begin. That's been happening over the last 30, 40 years of the world in general. And you're right. I mean, that's some of the efforts that, I try to get involved in is as soon as you can get into, let's say, different types of education facilities, whether it be elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, after school activities. I think our industry as a whole needs to do a lot more on that to kind of drive it forward and to get a lot of people interested in this career. Because, the thing I always push to everybody is that the world doesn't move without our industry. We drive the world forward. And why, how that excitement that me and you have and others have in this industry, we need to push that to the new generation of people that are starting to come into it.
I think as well, construction or AEC has been given a bad rep for a little while, maybe. So I think you mentioned earlier, like it's farming and then construction that are like the two oldest industries, and it's I'm drawing the parallel here. Like, yeah, those are typically seen as like not super cool careers. Nobody's growing up dreaming. Well, somebody is, but not too often. But it doesn't happen too often where someone's dreaming like, oh yeah, I want to be a farmer. I want to be a construction worker doing labor. Like those typically aren't the dreams that, young kids are having, right? But with the introduction of tech, I think it really changes the game, like a complete 180, because it's no longer, just you versus the project. You have all these really amazing, sophisticated tools that are bringing like planning and coordination and all these things that we do every day to a whole nother level, and giving you, next gen tools to do so. So I think, I hope again that, with the advent of a lot of these emerging areas with robotics and extended reality solutions and a lot more out there, it starts to become like, hey, I want to be that person that's, coordinating in virtual reality about how to build this building and, and seeing how we're actually going to solve this problem and all this cool stuff that's now able to be done because of technology. So
Yeah,
yeah,
and I think that's the interesting part of it too for them as well, for students and for people entering the industry. There is, as you talked about earlier, there is so many avenues that you can go in this industry. You can be part of that frontline force that's part of a general contractor or working for an architecture. Talk a little bit on a different side of things on some of the guidance you have for, like, let's say, startup companies. That say, okay, I have an interest in fulfilling the need in this industry, but I'm a computer engineering person. That's what I went to school for, and that's what I'm really good at. Explain how that would translate into making a product that then becomes a startup that solves a really big issue.
So I guess for the audience out there as well, I would say probably a decade, maybe a bit more ago, there were just a handful, just a small handful of construction technology startups on the market. And if we fast forward to today, it's been exponential growth. So there's like at least 5,000 plus. I'm sure there's probably more. I haven't sat down and counted it in a while, but that are out there that all solve different parts and pieces of AEC processes. So with a lot of these companies that have emerged over the past decade or so, a lot of these startups, what's happening is that, I think in the beginning, it was targeting a very specific problem on the job site and then creating a point solution to do so. Great example of this actually is like 360 cameras and video capture. So the old process, which I did this, was to take a camera with an SD card. You go all around the job site, you snap your photos one by one, you come back to the trailer, you pop your SD card into your PC, you sit down, you label all of the files, and then hopefully you can find that later with all your manually labeled things, and it's an awful process. Today, with startups that are, in this example, pinpointing reality capture, they're able to say, okay, let's just give you a 360 camera. We're going to use AI to match it up to your project plan. Go out, hit the start record button, walk the job. When you're done, hit stop, and then it'll all be magically mapped for you. You have a timeline, you have all this amazing data at your fingertips, and it doesn't take you any much longer than, basically walking the job site to get to you that data. So there are many, many, many different solutions that have revolutionized different processes like this with technology. But the challenge I think that a lot of startups have, and this is where, the connection with construction and some of the different career paths come in, is really understanding again, like from that field first point of view, why the problem is there. So connecting back from the construction side to someone who has that more, maybe computer science or technical background to create a digital solution makes a complete world of difference with how effective that startup is going to be. So there are a lot of different roles and ways that startups can connect with different pools of talent, I guess I'll say, to really round out their team and have a better perspective of what goes on in construction. But yeah, that's kind of some initial thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things that I've always seen with startups, just working with a few myself, is also the money aspect of it. Obviously, you've got to help, get some capital funding to really drive the product forward. How would companies, startups, how would they go about, going through that process?
Yeah, venture capital is basically what you're touching on there, Cody, I think.
Yes.
So fundraising. So I am not a complete fundraising expert, but what I will say is that there is a large network of VCs out there, specifically focused on construction and AEC, who are extremely excited about this market. So just by nature of me being in the industry for a while, there's, connections that I've built with some of these VCs. I'll also specifically point out as well, like there are construction companies as well who have started their own funds, which is extremely exciting because it's such a good time to basically say, okay, I'm a builder and I know exactly what happens in building. Let me use my extra superpower insights from having all these years of experience as a builder to now help inform how we're going to invest in these new solutions that are changing or transforming, rather, a lot of the processes. So it's a really exciting time, I think, for construction companies in particular who are able to have some sort of a fund in that respect.
And what would be one of like the shortfalls that you see with startups? I've seen some over the years where I'm like, it might be a little early. Explain, explain that process of looking at a company and saying, let's really get into the meat of what you're trying to do here.
Some of the shortcomings. And startups are in all sorts of different types of areas and stages and to looking at different problems, but maybe high level. So just from my experience alone, I've sat in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of demos and product pitches from startups. And I've seen a lot of good ones, but I've also seen a lot of really bad ones. And those really stand out. So I think sometimes what a lot of startups struggle with is they have such a really great technical team. They are excited about the technology. They, I guess, have a very specific vision for their product, but they may be lacking somebody on their team that's from the construction industry, actually. So they're really just taking their best guess as what to goes down on the job site. And it's not really, what they're bringing to the table doesn't resonate with the construction team that they're pitching or demoing to necessarily. So I think it basically like speaking each other's languages is a little bit of a gap that a lot of startups seem to have. And, tailoring the way that you're explaining your solution or the way that you're building your solution too, so that it's serving directly that end user. So a lot of times, and I'll pick on this one as well. So there are some amazing technology products out there. They are fantastic. They completely solve the problem. They are, 10 out of 10, a great solution, but they never get used. And the reason why is because it's just too dang hard. It's just too hard for your average, person who's out on the construction site to figure out which buttons to push, what to send where. Do I have to sync this? This won't turn on. I can't get Wi-Fi. How do I connect? So it's just too hard. And teams will unfortunately literally like throw out or, not even touch these incredible solutions because they can't figure out how to get past like step one or two. So one of the biggest things that I always say is like make ease of use like pretty high up on your priority list because you can have a fantastic solution and nobody will use it because they just can't figure out how to get, one, two, three taps and get going or clicks and get going with their day. So that's another big thing I think that a lot of startups struggle with is underestimating how simple they need to make it for it to be effective.
Underestimating that and then overestimating the impact early. I see. And you don't want to sell it short, but you don't want to sell it like it's the best product in the world at this until you really get a good data set behind it to make sure that it works out.
And again, just like taking that field first point of view, right? Like, how am I going to change this person's day by using my solution? I think that's a question that needs to be answered like way, way earlier than when a lot of startups kind of start thinking about it. So.
Yeah, and that's what I also, when I'm talking to other tech companies, in a role that I'm in, it's 90% of it is planning. That's the industry as a whole. And so if your product is not easy enough to use to be able to quickly plan something, that's where I see the biggest shortcomings we talked about. Is there certain areas of the startup world that you see coming that we haven't seen before that you think that are going to revolutionize a certain sector of the industry?
And I think this is already starting to happen a bit, and it's super exciting. So what I'm thinking specifically of is more data integrations, across platform and cross different solutions. So, like let's take that 360 reality capture example, for instance. Can we put that camera solution on a robotic solution that's autonomous to capture data? So now we can free up somebody else's time to go do more important tasks than just like literally running around the job site. Which, we could, it would be great if we could have something autonomously capture data for us, right? And we can, as humans, like focus on the important piece of, to your point, Cody, like planning. We need to plan, we need to manage. We shouldn't be doing, I would say busy work as the majority of our day. So with the data integrations and a lot of the interoperability that's starting to come out, I think that's going to really change the game in terms of, how much tech solutions can take on in terms of that busy work and what opportunity that opens up for, us as trained professionals and, we know the industry to really focus on what matters instead of, did I check that off my list or did I spend, however many minutes processing paperwork or, things that just aren't super high value for our time. And I also think like that data interoperability and basically like that cross-platform communication will also be key when we're looking at things like the labor shortage in the industry. So there's only so much that we can do with limited resources. And it definitely will take, more sophisticated technology solutions to help bridge that gap, and get us to a point where, we're not in such a dire need for labor.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I read a few years back in 2018. It was a McKinsey study, and they did a study on all the different types of technology buckets, let's say, in the industry. But the more that a tool was in operation, basically talked to each other, the better the use ended up being. And I think that's the next part of this data transition, like you said, is taking that idea of each of these different things solve a different purpose. But as a whole, you're looking at it, the industry needs it to start to talk to each other to make real-time decisions. And I think that that was the major part of that. In the next 10 years of this industry, data is going to be the center of it. And if we don't have to replicate that process over and over again as humans, and we can put ourselves back into the position of power to analyze that data to make better decisions, that's the piece of this.
100%. I think another thing that I'll mention that I'm excited for, or looking to see more solutions in this area, is surrounding training and learning and development. I think that will also be absolutely critical because there's so much historic builder's knowledge that is quite honestly not captured anywhere. And, we have a whole generation of tenured professionals with amazing, incredible experiences that, you can't really replicate or learn anywhere else except from asking them directly. So I'm really curious to see what types of solutions will come out to document those learnings and basically create a way to train on past years of experience, because today there's just no really great way, unless you're, thrown in, thrown into the fire and you learn that way. That's how I think it happens all too often in the industry. So having better resources specifically, I think will help, especially like mitigate risk as well, right? So, you don't have to learn things the hard way and have, mild disasters happening here and there. We can aggregate past experiences in an intelligent, hopefully fun way to learn, and then translate that forward to having preventative controls instead of reactive controls, or reactive processes on the job site.
Yeah, and that lessons learned catalog is something that I think the industry desperately needs. How do you collect that data from project to project or person to person and hand that down to future projects, depending on type, depending on complexity? I think that's a big push. The group that I work with, that's a huge push for us in the next 5 years is to come up with something that allows us to do that, whether it's something internal or external. We're definitely taking a look at how that might play out. Does that also push to where we're going in the industry with conferences? And I have this, major push to people. In the US, there is a ton of different conferences, different sizes, different objectives, different purposes, large, small, medium. Do you think that is an avenue for us to learn as an industry on the tech side to try to promote that within our different groups?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. I think it matters, if you're good about bringing those lessons learned back from the conference to the rest of your team. I personally, I think conferences are the most valuable, specifically to network, honestly, and like see and connect with other builders or other AEC firms in the space to see, hey, we had this problem with, I don't know, I'll pick like with building a modular project. How did you guys approach modular building? And that networking piece, I think, is absolutely essential and is what conferences do well. Because outside of that kind of neutral learning zone, it's pretty tough to get information shared between what's typically like competing bodies of, different builders or whatever it is. So, yeah, I think the networking piece and being able to, or being open at least to sharing information, is one of the things that conferences do really, really well. I'm not quite sure if I've seen some like super practical applications at conferences. I think that might be better suited for like a boot camp or workshop, especially for probably entry level or people who are earlier on in the career in the industry. So I'd love to see maybe some of that shape out somehow as well. But
And we've always learned differently. Everybody learns
absolutely.
differently, whether it's something written down, something that you're visually going to see, something that you see on the computer. There's different ways to educate different people and looking at the ways that that works. Mostly a lot of people are visual. And so one way or another, you're going to pick up on different aspects and try to put that together into a solution.
Completely agree. For me, if I don't write something down, I'm not going to remember it. So, big note taker here, but different
What
learning modes.
what's some of the insights that you have for like different industries, specifically like specialty contracts? The GC, we have to worry about the full picture, but a lot of the individual contractors have their needs as well.
So I think with, especially on the specialty contractor side, a lot of times they just don't have time to slow down and really take stock of their processes. And it could be one small tweak that you're making to a major process that basically, makes you however many times more efficient, or helps you save, whatever it is, money, schedule. It could improve quality by making just one small change. So on that aspect of things, my advice is, take the time to slow down a little bit and really look at, the core end-to-end process and ask yourself, like, is this really the best way to do this? Is there anything that is, really painful in my day that is taking too much time and I wish I could get rid of it altogether? Because when you ask those questions, more often than not, we're in a great time right now for construction tech. Chances are there's a solution out there that you can plug in fairly easily that will solve that problem for you. It's just understanding what your problem is and what the real pinch point is in your process, to be able to intelligently apply that solution, to make that small shift.
That's a great lead into this, which is risk mitigation. So that's the planning is the front end, the risk mitigation then comes into play, and then you start to really dive into it. And some of these things I'm going to dive into have been around for quite some time. Some of them are things that are being solved. Just want to kind of touch on a couple of the challenges. Procurement. Where do you see that world going in the next few years?
Oh man, procurement. Supply chains is it's such an interesting thing because I think what we've realized, especially out of the pandemic, or arguably still within the pandemic, is that everything's connected on some level. So where, even if you're building something, maybe it's a small project here in Los Angeles, you still might need to get a specific material from the complete other side of the world, and that might be held up from a million different reasons why. So I think with that, we have to find ways to probably anticipate the unknown, and that will, again, like we keep coming back to data, but it's true, right? So being able to run predictive models to give us better information and insights, like, okay, if I have these long lead items that I know I need to procure by this date, what, historically, like, what does that look like? And then being able to take that data and say, okay, well, in the last three projects that we had, it ran late by, maybe it's 6 weeks or whatever the case may be. Let's make sure that we put an order in for it way earlier. I think that will be a big piece, is like that data component. And it's already starting to help shift how we're approaching procurement. So that's exciting.
Yeah, I think the communication side too. One of the things that's so tedious about procurement is the calling. You got to call before construction, you got to call during construction, and all the way up to the point in which it gets out into the field. And I think any technology that you're starting to see, and I have come across a couple that are pretty good that are starting to help on the communication front. I'm also starting to see some help on the back end where materials might get stolen. And trying to look at that portion of not even just a product getting stolen on the job site, but the sub talking and saying, "Oh, we put this somewhere, but we don't know where we put it today."
Oh
So.
man, I'm flashing back to, hey, we got this shipment of, important material, and we put it somewhere and we can't find it. Can we reorder it? I'm like, oh no, you've got to be kidding me.
Because I mean, our waste is out the roof.
It
I mean,
happens
that's
all
one
the
of the
time.
biggest challenges is just the waste. And 90% of the time that you're seeing now, it's not the fact that we made a mistake on the front end. It's, oh, we forgot where we put it. You have to order a whole nother section of material to go get it. We had a job, not our specific job, but another job that another sub came on, and they got a building started up. And the ductwork had never been hooked up. It was still down in the basement. They forgot that the ductwork was down in the basement. So they ordered all brand new ductwork that was down in the basement. So It's just amazing on the procurement side. I think they
Yeah.
still have a long way to go, but I think there's some definitely some really good companies out there that are starting to address that side.
Yep, agree.
The next one I kind of want to touch on is unforeseen site conditions. So we
Ooh,
have as-built,
yes.
right? So they're
Yep.
supposed to be exactly right. Everything's supposed to be exactly where it is. But the problem is they're falling apart. They're not complete. They're not accurate. Where do you see that side of the industry going?
Yeah, so this I think will be solved by time, honestly. So in my experience, and I don't know how this has happened, but I've worked on three historical renovation projects at one point or another. And of course, we encountered some really crazy stuff that you would never see on a plan or even in a scan until you actually do, you know, some of the demo work and uncover what's there. So yeah, I kind of think this is going to come down to just time. And as our methods of capturing as-built improves, again, it's going to just empower us later down the line with better data. So we could open the box of like the digital twin conversation, but I think that's exactly where we're headed, where most buildings, maybe not all, needed like a completely functioning or perfect digital twin, but I think most buildings at some in some respect will have something like a digital twin that's fairly accurate and will prevent those surprises. But I do think we're still pretty early on understanding exactly what a good digital twin means, especially for like as building and preventing unforeseen conditions, especially in reno work. That's kind of the way I'm thinking about it, is really in terms of renovation work. But I think that will just get better and better as time goes on. Some things, of course, like are truly, truly unforeseen. Like, for example, digging up dinosaur bones on your project. There's no way. You could probably say, oh yeah, we're definitely going to dig up dinosaur bones. No, that's completely unforeseen. So, I mean, but there are things that account for that, right? Like different contract terms, insurance is a big one, of course. So, yeah, I think some of those mechanisms will also hopefully evolve and be a bit more standardized or well understood by your average person who's managing work in the field.
Yeah, I think a lot of that had to come back to documentation. The documentation of today is, you know, three-dimensional, but even more so with all the data you're talking about, tying that back with the 3D model, with the documents. And we're not back where the, you know, paper is falling apart anymore. We can take that and move it into the future into more of a better way to efficiently some more sustainable buildings going forward.
Yeah.
And I think it would cut down on a lot of that. And I think the other thing is there's going to be, in my opinion, there's going to be a lot of technology trying to solve unforeseen situations like dinosaur bones. I think that we have to do it responsibly because I think there is some things out there that could potentially do it the right way, but it might not be great for the environment. It might not be great for different situations. So I think that piece of the industry, there's a really big, and I think could be solved by different technologies that could solve
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. One of the things that I absolutely love about construction specifically and AEC as a whole is that it never gets boring. There's always something new to explore. There's new problems and challenges to overcome. So yeah, there's always something new.
I say that to everybody that's entering the industry and everybody that's interning with AEC firm, if you wake up and you go in with two notions. One, the plan that you had that day is going to be the plan that you follow today. That's
Yes.
number one. And number two, if you are bored by end of the day, this is not the right field for you. Because there is never, I think it's so interesting when somebody asks this question, what is the typical day? Is it a day that
Yeah.
is typical in this industry? And that's what makes it so exciting. is that you have to be able to solve problems regardless of where they come from and how you plan them. And then the last one I kind of want to get into is that these are things for the most part that you can plan for, but some of the things want to happen on a job site and you're going to have to kind of take it as you go. So some of the things that you might have delays on. Inspections, and just talk a little bit about that world and how that could get better potentially.
Gosh, so I mean, it all comes back to documentation, right? And I mean, I'm thinking like, well, data again, it's at the core of everything. But yeah, so how well are we documenting our projects? How well, like, how good is the documentation that's given to us? So I think, those two questions are a key piece, especially with like inspections and permitting, because it's basically like the show your work, but piece of the job. I'm thinking back to, math problems. All right, show your work. What did you do? Is it actually correct? So for us as builders specifically, how easily and efficient and effectively can you show your work? In, to traditional or past means, it was literally coming to the site, spending time, walking in person, inspecting various elements, hopefully before you close walls and things like that need to be inspected. But sometimes, construction has to go faster than your inspection can take place. So, do you have photos? Do you have a way to essentially go back in time and say, okay, here's exactly what's in this concrete slab or behind this wall, or to prevent having to rip something open and then now you have rework. So it comes back to documentation, I think, especially.
I think the big thing on this too that will become better in the future, and I hope so, is code checking. So, being able to check codes on the front end of construction while you're going through the documentation, let's say of the specifications and of drawings, that it would help you in reviewing the codes of not only the international, national, but also the state and local codes, where you're in the process of making something, but it's back checking to make sure that you're following those right codes throughout the process of design.
Absolutely. And this makes me also think too, like something that we've all talked about, I think, at this point is AI and GPT solutions that are out there. And assuming that the models that are out there are trained and trained well for construction, we can probably anticipate, a future or near future where we're using a construction code checking AI assistant, and it's catching those things far ahead in advance of when we would normally find out about different conflicts, and being able again to get us into a more of a preventative state instead of reactionary in construction. So that's another part of the tech journey in construction that I think will be very revolutionary, if we can pull it off in a way that we can have some level of solid trust. So that's my hope.
Absolutely. I think that also will come into play for inspections on the back end too. If we can do that with pictures, or we can do that with cameras, being able to pick up on those deficiencies as a backup to inspections, I think will be a really big game changer for the industry as well. So the front end, giving the ability to create the model, even though that the model in some respects is not the contract document in the US, which I swear I hope it gets to in the next 10 years. I can't stand when we have a conversation about the well, we made the drawings from the model, but the model's not a contract. It drives me crazy. But yeah, I think
That's
we're gonna have to
interesting.
get to that point. Other countries have already done that. It's the lifeblood of the way that they build now, and I think we've got to get to that throughout the industry. And that will help on all.
100%. I think standardization specifically is what we're challenged with here, like in the US at least. So there may be one or two projects that pull off being able to use the 3D model as the contract document, but maybe that's in a very special case where they have specific contract structure, they've signed off on it, they've like signed all the waivers or whatever, legal release that they have to sign off on. But it's really tough to like say, okay, here's the standard way to do it across the board. And
You don't
I
want to
don't,
take some of that away
yeah.
from them either, because some people
Yeah.
have that creativity piece of it.
Correct. Yeah. So we'll see how that evolves.
But codes are pretty straightforward. Once the code is established, that's something I think could get to a standardization. And I think that on both sides it really could help. The next thing is accidents. So we have got better with safety, but not very much. And I always say to this, to everybody, whether they're interns or just starting in the industry, we're one of the most dangerous industries. We can't not acknowledge that. What you are walking into every single day is not, it's not ready yet for the general public, but we're there trying to establish this to a point where if the general public ever loses trust, then we have a really big problem. So during construction, do you see different technology that can help us with safety, avoid some of the actions that we're seeing?
Yes, I think technology, of course, is let's say a supplement to improving safety outcomes on job sites. But safety is one of those things where it honestly comes back to people and culture and mindset, which I think is a little bit trickier for a tech solution to tackle. So it absolutely must have, in my opinion, that human element, because it's really hard to connect with, hey, this my app tells me that, I have a risk exposure of, maybe a fall element within this work plan, versus somebody having a conversation like, hey, Cody, I noticed you're going to do this work at height today, and I want to make sure you get home back to your family okay at the end of the day. How do you feel about, wearing some extra fall protection? Or let's sit down and talk a little bit more about, whatever it is that we want to do to mitigate this risk. Like that, I think, is a little bit more, connecting to the other person at a human level than saying, okay, my app's telling me to do this thing. I might or may not do it. So I think there's a big culture shift, like especially in the field as well, that needs to happen. And I think what I've seen too in my experience is like the funniest things matter so much. So even just changing the look of a hard hat is a big deal. Like, well, I'm wearing this new hard hat that looks different. Well, now I'm not cool anymore. And all the other guys are giving me crap for wearing the funny looking hard hat, even though
Yeah.
there's all this data that says it's safer. But like, fashion matters in construction a lot.
I
So,
had one guy
yeah.
that had a hard hat that looked like a cowboy hat. And then I had another one that went from white to like a black hat that made it look more slick and everything. Still followed all the safety guidelines, but yeah, it's more of a cultural look thing going on there.
So like branding and like that communication, that piece really matters a bit more. So yeah, I don't know
I
how we
think,
like shift that culture a little bit better, but yeah.
yeah, I think there's going to be some aspects of the industry where you start to see a little bit of preventing some accidents from occurring, or on the front end and on the back end. I think you might see some where if somebody falls from height, that they would be able to get to them and know if they're there quicker. But I completely agree. I think it's a culture thing. Everybody has to be on board from the time they walk on the job to the time they leave. We want you to go home the same way that you left. And that's a major point of the industry as a whole.
Think maybe like gamifying some things can help shift that a little bit, or make the incentives a little bit more tangible. So Yeah.
Yeah, I'm starting to see a lot of that on the equipment operation. One of the things that we're pushing a lot for people to do equipment operation is one piece of equipment to another piece of equipment is not always the same. They can be bigger, they can handle differently. So first step is, can we get them in an environment where they're learning in a simulator? And then if they need to go out, okay, then go out. But I think other companies are starting to work on it really hard where you can operate from anywhere in the world, put the piece of equipment on site, and they can operate it from right down the road from where they live. I
Yeah.
think that's a huge piece of safety. And I think that a lot of people don't even really understand that where that's going.
Yeah. That's a whole nother, yes, completely agree. So it's even better if you can like kind of take the human exposure factor away. That's kind of what you're getting at. I'm thinking too, like we're seeing a shift. I mentioned like modular projects earlier, where it's getting more into a manufacturing type of environment, which is you're able to control things a lot better and
Correct.
effectively, and your factors of safety also improve. So that's another benefit too, that's coming out of some of these new ways of building.
Do you think like the early 20th century, where we went to a really heavy manufacturing world, do you think that construction could get to that on the basis of making materials? I don't know if we'll get to a point where every single building looks exactly the same, nor do I think we probably should ever get to that. But if we get to the point of a manufacturing background like they did, then I think that you could do that on the prefabricated.
Yeah, I definitely think it's possible. I mean, we're already doing it, maybe on a much smaller scale than what you're imagining there, but yeah, it's possible for sure. I think it's a matter of, the demand and basically, do we trust it for our, building means and methods? That's a big question too. So, I'm actually very much looking forward to like prefab modular and seeing how that space kind of evolves as well, alongside the technology that's coming out.
Yeah, I think that you're right. In that prefab world, and we deal with a lot of companies that are subs that have gone to that world, and they've been very super successful in doing that. And I think that they see the value of the manufacturing background of how to do that successfully. And then when it gets out to the field, they take those components and try to put them in a more of an assembly line fashion versus it every single bolt. That or weld that's put into place is completely different. But that doesn't change the aesthetics of the building per se. You still want that creativity of each building kind of
Right.
looking different, but you get that manufacturing background, which leads to the final delay, which I actually think is the hardest, and there's no control is weather.
Yeah.
I think there's a huge thing here that we've always tried to predict weather for over 100 plus years.
Yep.
I think that now in construction, how can we go about looking at weather in a different way to better predict delays? Because it's going to happen. We're going to be delayed by weather. But how do we effectively capture that and explain those delays?
Yeah, and the weather topic is all too relevant, especially in light of the climate conversations that are ongoing. And we're seeing the impacts, right? I think there's like record heat waves and all sorts of crazy, crazy weather things. Earlier this year in Los Angeles, hashtag hurricane was trending because we had hurricane warnings and an earthquake at the same time. Like, what's going on here? So, yeah, completely, completely relevant. I do still think technology has a big part to play here, not with controlling the weather, but rather informing our behaviors earlier on. So again, coming back to data again. But I did do a webinar a few months ago with an interesting startup called Ehab, Ehab, where they're specifically looking at solving this problem with weather and its impacts on construction sites. So some really interesting content coming out from their solution. But essentially, there are ways that we can take historical data that's localized, and then match that up with also historic project schedule data to again be a bit more informed, so that we're not scrambling last minute to, put, rain mitigation efforts in place or hurricane mitigation efforts in place. We can actually say, okay, well, we know we have a 90% chance of a hurricane in the next 2 weeks. Let's prep now and be ready instead of saying, oh, like the day before, let's put all this stuff and kind of scramble and panic. So technology is definitely helping to change that. And going back again to like the integration conversation, I think in past years or a little while ago, we were probably operating with limited data, maybe like a local forecast, maybe with a little bit of, National Weather Service historic data, but nothing that was tied into construction, like project schedule intelligence. But now we have the tools to be able to connect those two different, seemingly siloed data sets. But now, once making the connections and the parallels, now we can start to have insights and again, take action based on those insights instead of guessing, essentially. So.
Yeah, so that's what I'm actually going on one of the projects that I'm working on right now. I do a lot of work with, Evercam's technology, and one of the things that they have developed as part of that technology is this ability to tie on-site weather cameras into camera footage. So you have essentially real-life data over the course of years on this particular project. And you are literally tying that back with a visual data source that then is connected to the schedule and auto-reporting that as part of the data.
Fantastic. Yeah,
And I think
that's
that's where it's got to
amazing.
go. Yep, that's where it's got to go and develop that out long term for not just one site, but let's say, the whole state or whole country, whole world. And you really start to dive deeper into saying, okay, it's going to take us 2 years to develop this project. We're going to need this many weather days because this is what we've seen in that area over a period of time.
Absolutely. And great to hear about that feature. So, nice thinking by Evercam of connecting that information together.
Absolutely. I think it's a major step into an area of construction that we really don't have very much power over, but we can do a lot better planning if we have that data at our fingertips. Which leads me to my final question for you.
All right.
Where do you see Aaron Kahn Consulting going?
So gosh, it's been such an exciting journey. I think I was definitely a little crazy when I first started out, being like, all right, I'm just gonna rip off the band-aid and dive right into this whole different world. But the way I see myself, I guess, growing is really focusing in on, from this first year's experience, the areas that I've seen from both contractors and tech providers that are most in demand and where they're most challenged with. And then kind of refining that so that, I'm focusing also on the parts and pieces that best fit my background that are the most fun for me, and then high value for my clients. So that's a pretty broad statement. And it's because each individual has all sorts of different things that are on their horizon that they're challenged with. But something that I also would want to do more of, specifically for contractors, and this ties into my vision of different learning platforms, but doing more training on some of the basic systems out there. So I think there's a whole subset of people, specifically in construction companies, where they have technology tools, but they're maybe getting 10% out of it. And with just a little bit more training, you can, get 90% out of that tool that you have access to. So I think another area of focus, specifically on the contractor side, is unlocking optimization. So there's so much tech out there. A lot of builders already do have good tech systems, but they might just be missing the know-how on how to get that tech solution fully optimized for their business. So that I think is what at least I've seen come up as most important for contractors. And then for startups, it's really providing coaching, feedback, giving insights on product roadmap, beta testing, help putting together things like case studies. So doing more of that interesting project work. So it's always different. And again, getting back to construction is a very widely varied industry, never gets boring. I don't want to be bored moving forward.
Of
So
course.
yeah, keeping my projects interesting and exciting is definitely on the horizon.
And where do you see the state of consulting going in this industry? Do you think that somebody that, grew up with the background that you did, do you think that that's a great avenue for somebody to go into in the industry?
I think we're going to see more and more independent consultancies pop up for AEC. I know when I first started, I got a lot of interest and some genuine feedback from, different colleagues in the industry was like, "Oh yeah, I've been thinking about doing that at some point." So I know a lot of people are thinking about it. It's just a matter of time, I think, and maturity for the industry to also, be able for to have the awareness and then be able to say, okay, I think I need help with this technology stuff, or whatever the case may be, to and go from there. But yeah, I think we're going to see more and more different types of services also pop up.
Aaron, I wanted to thank you for joining me today, and talking about, different topics around risk mitigation consulting, what you're doing in the industry. And it was great seeing you in person at RCN.
Yeah,
Look
absolutely.
forward to more conversations with you in the future, and hope to see you at future conferences.
Yeah, same here, Cody. And thanks again for having me on the podcast. And always great to connect and share a little bit about my experience. So thank you.
Thank you.